Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Frank and Patsy podcast for October. Jeez, oh man. April 1st, April Fool's Day. April Fool's Day. I'm your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm co-host, Frank Natel.
And Frank, it's we made it to April. I mean, I know this has not been a stellar year so far, to say the least, but 2020 is already a quarter of the way over, and boy, it just flew right by, didn't it?
It did. We're solidly into the spring season. I mean, we get lots of rain just about every day, or, you know, 3 or 4 days in a row, and then we'll get one day of sunshine. But hey, that's spring, right?
Yep. Yeah. Hard to believe. You know, that my old man always used to say, you know, as you get older, time goes quicker. You know,
he wasn't lying.
He was right, man. He was right. Yeah. Hard to believe. April 1st already. Yesterday, in what was probably the most somber presser, news presser I've ever seen from any White House, we were told that approximately 100,000 to 240,000 folks are going to die from this coronavirus, and that's according to the model. And Dr. Fauci was very close in pointing out that the numbers are flexible; they're not etched in stone. That model is going to change as more data becomes available. And I was wondering if you had saw it, and what your thoughts were on what you saw and what we heard yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, my thoughts are that they're embracing reality and they're telling reality. And, you know, it's a bit surprising because all we've ever seen is the rah-rah, you know, everything's going great. And, you know, even if it's not going great, we're going to get this under control quickly and it will be going great. So, you know, it's a little surprising that there was a willingness to embrace reality and to speak reality to the public that way. But, you know, as far as the numbers go, I ran those numbers. I can't remember exactly when we saw the numbers coming out of China, and said, you know, 7.4 billion people on the planet. There was a thing that came out, said 70% of the people on the planet will be infected. Not, you know, with enough to kill you, but one percent would die. So if you run those numbers and then you divide that or multiply it by 0.045, because the United States population is 0.045 of the world population, you come out with a number around 200,000. So it's not really surprising to me that that's the number. It's surprising to me that that they admitted it.
Yeah. And what is surprising, and I'll be honest, Frank, I wonder if it's because if you look at an article today in businessinsider.com, was an article by Tom Porter. The headline is, journalists are skipping Trump's daily coronavirus press briefings, saying they don't have enough news value. The first paragraph is, reporters are skipping President Donald Trump's daily coronavirus news briefings, and TV networks are increasingly choosing not to broadcast them live because they believe they don't have enough news value to risk breaking social distancing rules. In recent days, there have been scores of empty seats in the White House briefing room where Trump has delivered updates on the U.S. battle against the novel coronavirus alongside public health officials. But instead of delivering key information and sober assessments of the situation to the American public, Trump has frequently resorted to tactics more familiar with his raunchous campaign rallies, such as boasting of his accomplishments, floating misinformation, attacking the press, and taunting Democrats with, at the time, Governor Cuomo of New York being a target. And I say at the time because while this was going on. Totally different tone yesterday. Do you think that the empty seats and his pressers has anything to do with his tone, or do you think that maybe he's looking at this in a different way?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, it really is hard to say. I wouldn't be surprised if that had an impact on him and he thought, I better try to get my ratings up, because that was one of the things that wasn't on that laundry list of things you just said, but was one of the things that Trump would like to tout his great ratings that he had over the course of his coronavirus briefings. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that the lack of TV time influenced his decision to turn his tact, I guess, towards more truth-telling, more somber assessment. But, you know, there's also the side of this that is, I think, I don't want to steal some of your thunder, but I'll allude to maybe something you're going to talk about later. Is there an ulterior motive to telling the truth at this point in time? Is there an ulterior motive to making people aware that they're going to need surgical masks, N95 masks, more medical equipment, and things like that? And that'll in turn boost the bottom line for somebody close to him or somebody that he's directly, you know, associated with. So, and we can go into more detail with that a little bit later, but, you know, that may be a motive too.
Yeah, I really find that, I don't want to say hard to believe, because I sound naive whenever I say that or say it that way, but it's unsettling whenever you realize that ratings and entertainment is still that important to this guy whenever we're looking at the very best, 100,000 people dying.
Right.
You know? And one of the things that pushes this guy, one of the things that he's concerned about, is ratings. That's disturbing on a lot of levels.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you've got somebody who's a sideshow barker, a entertainment, you know, first type person, somebody who's a reality TV host, that's what he was. Mm-hmm. He never held public office. To entrust this situation with this kind of gravity to it, to that person, and expect that he would bring something to the table other than what is his MO. That's, you know, I guess that's what you're talking about when you say you sound naive. And I don't mean to say it to emphasize that. I mean to say it to say that the rest of the country, the people that, you know, were the ones that voted for him and entrusted him to this position and left him in this position, that how could they be surprised, you know, that this is what we've got?
I think there was a lot of willful ignorance on a lot of votes that he got.
Yeah.
I really do. And every time I see this shit, Frank, the only thing that keeps going through my head are the same three words over and over again that I've been pounding my own brain with for the last 3 years. And those words are, but her emails.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, they're the same three words I say every fucking time this guy comes out and says, come April, all this is going to go away when it gets warm. Or this is just a Democratic hoax. Or that blonde fucking idiot on Fox Business who said this is just another ploy for the Democrats to impeach him again. I was like, but her emails. This is where we are because of her emails.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, absolutely. But her emails is the thing that caused us to be here. Absolutely, 100%. The thing, though, about Trish Regan that you said about this is another hoax to impeach him. Now the newest thing, and I know we didn't really necessarily plan to talk about this, but and we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but the newest thing, the newest excuse, and this is the thing that gets me. Anybody that supports Trump are usually people that don't like excuses. They don't like, you know, they want direct, no bullshit. They want you to give them, you know, not the sugar-coated thing. They want you to be direct and blunt. That's what they liked about Trump. Mm-hmm. And take personal responsibility, you know, that kind of thing. Well, here's an excuse coming out of Mitch McConnell about the impeachment, saying that Trump had the impeachment to deal with up and through January. And that's what That's what delayed his response to this. So in other words, they're admitting, clearly admitting that he has failed to respond properly. But what they're doing is they're making this excuse that it's because of the impeachment proceedings. So I love that they're doing that because, quite frankly, it admits that he's failed. It's their admission that he's failed. Now, here's the problem with that. The CDC issued its first warning on January 8th about this. Trump held campaign rallies on January 9th, January 14th, January 28th, January 30th, February 10th, February 19th, February 20th, February 21st, February 28th. He also golfed on January 18th, January 19th, February 1st, February 15th, March 7th, and March 8th. The first time he admitted the problem was coronavirus might be as big a problem as it is, might be a problem at all, was March 13th. So, you know, this impeachment thing that to try to exonerate him or to excuse him from acting is just paper thin, paper thin. So I love it that they're trying to make that excuse. And, you know, clearly this is going to be on his hands.
I would like to know, at what point did these folks realize that they're just speaking in an echo chamber? You know, that whenever you have things like this, whenever you have things like COVID-19, whenever you have big problems, you have big issues, that you have things that affect every president. Every president has to address, right? There's always some, I don't want to say there's some tragedy because that's kind of downplaying the importance of it, but there's always something. A great example is George Bush had 9/11, right? Obama had what, H1N1 and swine flu. He had both of those. You know, you can go on and on and on down the line. From what I could tell, every president that we've had since you and I have been alive has had something that they've had to deal with, whether it's a virus or a war. Bush Senior had a Desert Storm, right? So there's always something that they have to deal with. So whenever these things happen, people start paying attention to them, right? And you and I had talked for how long and how often have we said about, you know, people don't have enough time to watch news all the time. They don't have enough time to really pay close attention to what's going on in politics or in news. They need 5 or 10 second sound bites because life is very hectic and people are very busy and they got to get on, they got to do everything. Well, now everybody's home, right? Or if they're not home, then they're going to work. All they're doing is going to work and then coming home. You know, that time that they have, we're spending taking the kids to soccer or working that second job, they're probably not doing anymore. So they're sitting in their living rooms and they're watching TV. And maybe they are watching Fox News. Maybe, you know, maybe they are. More people are watching MSNBC and CNN or even CBS, you know, the three major networks, if they're still that, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC. So they're starting to pay attention to what these folks are saying now. And now it's going to be very difficult because you have that spotlight on you. You have people watching what you're saying. You have people listening to your excuses. It's going to be very difficult to start explaining bullshit away now like they've been able to before because less people are distracted. More people are watching you now. More people are paying attention to you now. And whenever you are having these pressers every day, and whenever you have to, if you don't know the whole thing and you don't know what you're talking about, which as a president, I'm not necessarily expecting you to know about a virus, but the people who are on the podium with you should know about the virus, right? Whenever you're saying something and then 5 seconds later, pick a person, any person that has the word doctor before their name, are saying something else, people are paying attention to that. And whenever you have the speaker of the majority leader in the Senate making bullshit excuses like this, and people realize, you know, everything you just said, you know, he had this rally here, or hey, maybe I went to that rally, or maybe my uncle went to that rally, or my brother or whoever, all of a sudden, it's chipping at the armor. It's putting cracks in the armor. It's and even the echo chamber that he's talking to, it's going to start to break down a little bit. It's going to start to become less reliable because all of a sudden people have to listen to you, right? They have to now because where else are they going to get their information? You're having your press briefings.
It's a great point that you make. It's a totally, you know, amazing point to bring up that shift. It's a paradigm shift, really, from where we were 4 or 5 months ago, heck, even 3 months ago, to where we are now. It's absolutely spot on, Patsy, that now we have people that are just have nothing else to do but sit in front of their TV. And, you know, the weird dynamic of that is because he was on so much, there is a little bit of just repetition of seeing him and hearing him and wanting to have that port in the storm. There's a little bit of a bump in some people that were like, oh, okay, you know, this is our president and he's talking to us and this is good. Let's get behind him. And now there's going to be this fallout in the sense of, well, wait a minute. Why didn't we have enough masks in December and January? Why weren't we turning our economy to doing things that would protect every American from the spread of this virus? Because let's face facts, we could have converted over a lot of things and opened up new businesses in December and January to build respirators and ventilators, to make more masks, to do a lot of things that, you know, we could have said, let's start like we talked about last week with the way South Korea handled the virus. We could have had people set up as early responders medically, and we could have sent them to meet anybody that was coming in from a foreign country, mainly Asia at this time, China, South Korea, anything like that. And we could have said, we have to quarantine you to your house for 14 days. And who have you come in contact with in the last 14 days? And then they could have gone out and seen those people. And they could have made sure that they could have nipped this in the bud really early. And it wouldn't have taken a rocket scientist. It just would have taken, how have we done this before? How have other people done this before? Let's look at that. But the problem was, he cut out all those people. He cut out that response force that was out there, you know, during the Obama era, because he hated everything Obama, and he hated the idea of keeping people on a payroll that were not immediately needed. Well, that's what you need them for, is to prevent this kind of stuff from happening. So yeah, we're going to have more people that are paying attention. It's a spot on point you make. It's a paradigm shift. And when they start to see all this stuff and they start to hear all this stuff and how that's inconsistent with the timeframes, it's going to bite them in the ass. It really is.
You know, you had mentioned that we were going to talk about ulterior motives.
Yep.
And we had talked before we started recording how we both kind of speculated that Trump's change of tune, most notably yesterday, is due because he either has an interest in a company or companies, or he has donors, he has people he knows, maybe his kids, maybe his in-laws. Somebody has interests or owns businesses who are making masks and respirators and things like that. And right up until this moment, I was willing to hang my hat on that being a big influence. And I'm kind of going to backtrack a little bit on that. I'm not saying it's not an influence. I'm just saying I don't think it's as big. And I'm wondering if what we had just discussed, how those obvious discrepancies are going to become more and more, well, obvious, and more people are going to pay attention to them. I wonder if that's not part of the motivation for him to start actually acting for as best he can, start acting more presidential.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's something that, you know, we have to really pay attention to, because this inside dealing and the idea of making money from the connection to the office of presidency, you know, it's already happened with real estate deals, It's already happened with foreign real estate investments. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that it's potentially going on here and that this is a reason to start, you know, broadcasting the severity of this illness and severity of how it's going to impact our country, so that there'll be more, you know, direct stimulus to produce and buy products that could be made by people that are close to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's no way anybody like him swings as much as far as he does in such a short amount of time. If there's not a more personal incentive for him to do so, this, cause let's be honest, Frank, this guy doesn't give a shit about people. He could care less.
No. And
he has a change in tune because it's going to affect him somehow.
Exactly. And let's face facts. We had Anthony Fauci that was there with him from the beginning. And I'm telling you, look, it's not my bag. It's not my thing to know anything about pandemics, to know anything about COVID-19. I haven't studied it. I'm not a medical person, but I knew back in January that the numbers would be prognosticated to be that number because I just did the simple math. Mm-hmm. So Fauci clearly knew that. This was not new to him. He didn't come up with that yesterday. It's just a matter of Trump was convinced to allow him to say that yesterday.
Right. Right. Speaking of Fauci, he is, I don't know if he's the head of the National Institute of Health or not, but he is definitely, for lack of a better term, a big shit there. He has had pretty obvious and immediate but he's saying what Trump says literally at the same podium at the same time, totally contradict each other. And you're seeing Fauci now kind of playing nice with Trump. And it's obvious it's because he doesn't want to get fired. To be honest, I don't want him to get fired either. But at the same time, I do want the truth to come out. My question is, do you think it would be in our best interest if Congress were to pass a law that say that people in his position, and this is just an example, again, the National Institute of Health, cannot be fired by the president? You have protections for people who are heads of like the FTC and the Social Security Administration, right? They're independent agencies. But for some reason, the head of the National Institute of Health are not given that kind of protection. Do you think that that's an oversight that should be corrected?
I mean, given the situation we're in right now, and the fact that you wouldn't want politics to come into play in a time where, you know, public health is a serious. I mean, public health is always a concern. It's always a function of government. That's one of the main functions of government. But to have decisions made about leadership to be political would be seriously detrimental. I mean, I think that there should be some kind of protections in place for somebody in such a leadership position. You know, I don't know what the exact thing is. Just maybe there has to be a panel. Maybe there has to be an opportunity to have a 30-day period where, you know, a court could look at whether or not there's justified reason for the change. I mean, we always want to give our executive leadership people an opportunity to pick their person. And I get that. You know, you may want to say, look, I earned the right to appoint my own chief of staff, my own Attorney General.
The head of the FTC isn't there for life. You know, he has a what do you call it? You know, he's only there for, I want to say, 4 years or something like
right.
that.
So yeah, and that's what I'm getting to is that, you know, when you've got when it's a health issue, and when it's a potentially public health issue that's going to impact a large swath of people, I think you have to have more protections in place, and you like the consistency. And I'll tell you just to I didn't know the exact title. Fauci is the he's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and he's held that title since 1984. So that tells you right there, that goes through Democrat and Republican administrations for nearly what are we coming up on? 4 more years will be 40 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, 36 years.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously this guy knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And the fact that he can't tell you what he's talking about because he's going to shit can a 36-year career because he's not telling you what somebody who was more interested in entertainment than in people's well-being. That seems to me that's a dynamic that people really should have thought that through a little better.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's another wake-up call for us in America that we've always felt like that our presidents, because clearly for 36 years, you know, no president has been, and listen, the guy's dealt with not just COVID-19, he's dealt with AIDS. He was a big pioneer in the AIDS fight. He's dealt with Ebola and Zika, you know, so this isn't something that, you know, he's been on the front lines of some serious stuff. And if any president wanted to say, you know, this isn't my guy, you know, we've gone through, you know, more than a handful of presidents during that time. We could have had any one of them say, this guy isn't, you know, the guy anymore to do this, but he's been tried and tested on a variety of different emerging diseases that have threatened public health. And, you know, nobody's seen any reason to remove him from this situation, from this position. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think the American public has been lulled into this sense of security because this, you know, has never been a partisan issue.
And all of a sudden it is.
Yeah.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Yep.
Speaking of really, really, really poor things to have issues about, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, I think that's how you say his name.
Yep.
On Tuesday said that they're going to run out of ventilators and the federal government really isn't helping. He said that the state of Illinois has received just 10% of some of the medical equipment that it's requested from the federal government. And he's warning that the state could soon run out of ventilators as people are starting to show up at hospitals in really, really big numbers. He told he told CNN apparently yesterday that Illinois has been forced to bid against other states and even the federal government itself in order to buy personal protective equipment like masks, gowns, face shields, and to help guard healthcare workers against the virus. But states have what the state has received falls far short. They asked for 1.7 million masks, and they've gotten about 400,000. They asked for, he said, according to the quote, many, many gloves and gowns and so on, and they've gotten about 10% of what they asked for. This is what he told Chris Cuomo last night. They were promising millions of tests. And they had mentioned there were so many tests, they're all out there, just that the hospitals or whoever who are administering the tests don't know who to send them back to, so they're sending them to the wrong place. According to this governor, they were promised millions of tests. The truth is that we've gotten very few tests from the federal government, and their federal testing is slowed way down. And obviously, those comments counter what Trump has said, that the country is well prepared to treat everybody. The problem is with some people, no matter how much you give, it's never enough, the president said of Cuomo. How about that one? Whenever he was talking about Cuomo, but the president was talking about Cuomo. And now you're seeing a similar thing with Illinois. why is it so hard, I guess, to number one, just say what the problem is and how many you have? Why is that so hard? And number two, give me one good reason why a governor of a state who's dealing with a pandemic would lie.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense either way. And, you know, Trump has stated unequivocally that if you're nice to me, if you're a governor and you show appreciation, I'll talk to you and I'll give you what you need. If you're not nice to me, I don't want to talk to you. He said that himself unequivocally.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't even really need to infer what's going on here. There's also the idea that, you know, not only is he not cooperating with the states that have governors that are, quote unquote, not appreciative of him, but that we're just underprepared as a country to deal with this, to give everybody what they need, to do it in a way that is, I don't know if the right word is logical, but to do it in a way that is functional, that works, that is, yeah, that thinks about the function of it, the functionality of it. Because from what I'm seeing from the governors, what they're saying across the board is they're competing for products that are medical in nature that they need on the open market. They're competing with one another, and they're competing with FEMA. And what should happen is FEMA or somebody that's at that level of the national level of emergency response should have an allocation of X numbers of each thing that's needed. And they should say each state is going to get at a level of what they need. And then if they make requests because of circumstances they're experiencing, we have another allotment to start giving out to them what they need. And we respond by going out there with everything they need. Not questioning what they need, just bringing everything that they need. That's what you do in an emergency situation. And because we've gutted the pandemic response team, because we've gutted FEMA, they're now just, I know somebody that got called out recently to assist with FEMA. And, you know, this is a person that probably should have been called literally 2 months ago. Just got called out 3 days ago, 2 or 3 days ago. So, you know, there's no logical or functional plan in place to make sure that the items that are being requested by governors are getting to them in the numbers that they need.
No, there's not any. We were talking about that presser yesterday, and whenever they showed that graphic of the model, and it said, you know, 100 to 240,000 people will die. I had, whenever we were talking about this before we got on air, I made the statement. I told you, I said, you know, what bothered me was not one of these reporters asked them what those numbers would have been if we would have addressed this 2 months earlier, whenever we should have. And you had said that it was sort of addressed. Did you want to let everybody know what you were saying was something that cost?
Well, I mean, first, I think that you're absolutely right. The question you asked was never asked, and I wish it would have been asked. But Jim Acosta from CNN probably came the closest to that. And when he asked Trump if his early response was inadequate, and if he'd responded sooner in the seriousness that he had done, would we be looking at a different outcome? And he said, to everybody's surprise, I think, Trump said, that's a fair question. But he didn't give an answer. He never really answered the question. He just skirted around it. Nobody followed up. Nobody asked a specific question of whether death toll numbers could be lower if we had had an earlier response. But, you know, Acosta, being who he is, was the closest to that kind of question. But yet he also said, you know, he had seen a difference in Trump yesterday, which, look, just from a reporting standpoint, as you did at the beginning of the podcast, from a reporting standpoint, that is a big headline. That's a big takeaway. We saw a different Trump yesterday. Now, the question of why we saw a different Trump, the motive, that's up for debate. But we definitely saw a different Trump.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe, like I said, that you're going to see such a change, such a dramatic change in such a short amount of time. And that's really what I is the killer, is in such a short amount of time. Having a big change like that in a person is not that unusual. I mean, it shows that they're actually growing or they're changing or whatever. But to have it in such a short period of time, and we're literally talking days, really makes me question the motivation behind that change. I you know, this isn't the ghost of Christmas past coming back to home. You know, there's
right.
There's something there. There's an ulterior motive. There has to be.
Absolutely. And before we get too far away from the governors and how the governors have been responding, J.B. Pritzker is a Democrat from Illinois, and you know, we tend to sometimes point out the differences in the parties and how they respond. But Larry Hogan, who we've talked about on this program before, is the Republican governor from Maryland. And yesterday he flat out stated on an NPR interview and also on a CNN interview that Trump was misstating, at the very least, misstating the availability of test kits to the state of Maryland, because he indicated that they absolutely don't have enough. This is Hogan, a Republican governor, saying they absolutely don't have enough. And that, in fact, to the point that we just made just a few moments ago, that everybody's flying blind right now because there's no direction being given.
Yeah. Yeah, and that seems to be reflected in the states too, having to I don't want to say fight amongst each other, but there's no common direction, right? They're really right. I talked about this on with Master Grant and Dr. Dye was on with us. And I had mentioned that, you know, it sounds like the governor of the state is the person who should be sitting in the White House with the way he's answering, the way he's dealing with these things. And the person who's being the clown at the podium behind the seal of the president should be the asshole governor for some backwards, you know, Southern Republican state that is just kind of going on his own way. I hope that what we're seeing, that this change, that this attitude, that this come to Jesus moment is legit. And we're seeing a president who probably doesn't know how to lead, but at least wants to lead. Because at the end of the day, whether we like this clown or not, we need him to succeed. Right? We need him to do what's right and to give us the supplies and the leadership and everything that we need. In all honesty, I don't see him having the ability to do it, but that doesn't mean I don't want him to. It doesn't mean I'm not hoping he can or will, but I don't know, Frank. It just strikes me as not legit.
Well, absolutely. And the thing about it is, you know, past performance doesn't always predict future results, but we have a lot of past performance to look at with Trump, and we have a lot of real current or recent past performance that is alarming. And it's like, if you bury your head in the sand, or if you just say like, no, that's probably not.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I don't know, dude. I really don't know. You still there? I think I lost you. I don't see it on here anymore. Oh, well. Well, I guess this is a good spot to just put a fork in this thing and call it a day then. So for everybody listening, thank you for your time. Your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend that some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It really, really does. So on behalf of my co-host, Frank, and myself, until next time, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't get the reference, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. That being said, until next time, until we meet again, as they like to say, goodbye, good luck, and God bless. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.